Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new experience.
Reality, spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality, spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality, spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality, spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Get real.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and today is going to be a fabulous show. Just like every other show, I want to welcome you to the program and thank you for spending your day. I'm grateful for all of your listening ears. I'm grateful for your support, all of the emails that you keep sending. Thank you so much. But before I get to my guest today, I want to explain to the new people that have found the show and just what is reality spirituality. Really, really quickly, reality spirituality, it's not a religion. It's a guide to living connected, to living self-aware, to that source energy. Some people use the term God, some people say universe, some people say higher power, spirit. It doesn't matter. It's just living and being aware that you are in every moment connected. Close your eyes for a second and remember a time when you experienced an indescribable moment, a moment that connected you with the energy that creates worlds, a moment that you felt the power of the Creator, a moment where you were connected to heaven and earth. If you're like me, when I experience those moments, I get overwhelmed, and usually 9 times out of 10, I start crying my eyes out only because of that powerful, powerful energy that just gets in every cell of my body. This show, Reality Spirituality, is about experiencing more of those moments on your journey, more of those moments during the day. And my favorite quote from Abraham Esther Hicks, is you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. So Reality Spirituality, this show is all about the journey. And today, I am so honored and so excited to introduce to you Panache Desai, who I found coincidentally, of course there are no coincidences, surfing through videos, you know, spiritual videos, looking for people with a message, message that I could connect to, that I could relate to. And everyone, you know that there are no mistakes in this universe. And so I was guided probably about a year and a half ago to this fabulous, fabulous young man. Panache Desai is a contemporary thought leader whose message of love and self-acceptance has drawn thousands of people from around the world to his seminars and workshops. He's not aligned with any religion or spiritual tradition. He empowers people to free themselves of pain, suffering, sadness, and self-limiting beliefs. Desai has appeared on the Emmy Award-winning OWN series, Super Soul Sunday, and was featured on OWN's Soul to Soul, Asking Life's Big Questions. He's a highly sought-after speaker. He's on the faculty of Omega Institute, and he's also at the center of Kapralu Center for Yoga and Health. Of course, I just annihilated that name. Panache, I want to welcome you to Reality Spirituality. Thank you for spending your time with us. And I forgot one of the most important. He has a brand new book out called Discovering Your Soul Signature by Panache Desai and a new 33-day program beginning tomorrow. Woo, that's a lot. Panache, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you and with everyone tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Now, just indulge my new listeners for a minute. Give us just a little bit of your background. How did you begin on this journey of awakening, this journey of self-awareness, this journey that has brought you to this moment today, and to share what you've learned on that journey? Where did it all begin?
Well, my journey really began even before I was born. My mother had had a stillborn baby girl that she'd carried full term and that subsequently died on the night of her birth in the hospital. So my older sister died that night. And the funny thing about that evening was that 9 other Indian babies died that night in that hospital. And to this day, nobody knows what happened. And she basically was devastated by this, had a hard time getting over it. And when she got pregnant with me, about 3 months into that pregnancy, she went to India to be blessed by a guru. And, you know, when you're Indian, you know, you always have some form of a connection to these gurus and mystics and yogis. And on my father's side, we'd had this unbroken chain of this relationship with these gurus and teachers who, in their presence, you could start to feel your own divinity. And so she went to India, was blessed in the womb at 3 months, and she was basically told at that point that I'd be coming back for one purpose and one purpose alone, and that was to help facilitate this shift in consciousness that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm born in London, born into this family, and my grandmother raised me for the first 5 years. And my grandmother was this really frail Indian lady. She wore these thick framed glasses, and she always had this distinct aroma of coconut oil. And every day, Rebecca, she'd pray for us all. And I grew up in this environment of prayer and worship and devotion. That, you know, I spent most of my formative years in the meditation room. And to me, that felt like home. Subsequently, when you are Indian, on the weekends, you watch Bollywood movies and you go see gurus. And so on the weekends, we'd go see spiritual teachers. And it's almost as though every one of these spiritual teachers had been waiting for me. It's so strange. Like, they'd always say, you know, literally, thank you for incarnating. We've been waiting for you. You have my blessing. And it's almost like they knew something about me that I had no idea about, you know. And my life was pretty strange. I remember having certain experiences with people where it's almost like I knew everything about them, or I could feel everything inside of them. And literally through our interaction, and of course I wasn't doing anything, they would start to shed all of the heaviness and the burdens that they'd accumulated throughout the course of their lives, to the point where as a child I would describe it as, you know, they'd get up and they'd be sparkly. And so this was happening, and honestly, I had a hard time reconciling it. I was very skeptical as a child because being Indian, and you see everything. You've seen gurus that really are supporting people, and you've seen gurus that are just leading people down the garden path. And so for me, I was very skeptical. I never believed in any of it. I was always the kind of person where, unless I'd experienced it, it wasn't real for me. I never took anyone's word for anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, here I am. All these gurus and teachers saying, we've been waiting for you, you have my blessing. All these things are happening around me, and quite frankly, I just thought I was weird. I just wanted to be normal. Like, I just wanted to watch the A-Team and hang out with B.A. Baracus, because I love B.A. Baracus, you know. Mm. And so this was my life. And subsequently, growing up, had a very hard time. I was very empathic. I was raised in East London, which is a very poor working-class neighborhood where there's just a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. Everyone's in the energy of survival. And it was tough for me. You know, I could feel everything around me. I wasn't violent. I wasn't really into surviving. I was just into living my life. I didn't fit into any group or even subscribe to that group mentality. And so I was kind of this lone island. And as a result of that, I got bullied in high school extensively and, you know, began to really question why I was alive. And at a certain point, even wanted to not be alive anymore. You know, I couldn't understand why people were so cruel to each other, and why people needed to dominate each other, and why everyone was kind of playing these games that didn't really benefit who we were. And get to a point in my 20s, early 20s, where I just had enough of it all. And my awakening came in the form of a fist fight in a bar. I was literally jumped by 3 people in this bar. And even though they knew me, none of my immediate circle was there. And the bouncer knew me, so he pulled me out of there. I was very lucky to get out in one piece. And subsequently that night, I went to another place, and before we'd gotten there, somebody had been shot. And so I just was getting the message that you know, I had to change. I had to do something differently. Like, I had to stop living this lie. I had to stop living everyone else's version of my life. I had to get back to my soul signature, to who I am. And so subsequently, I went away for 6 months and meditated and went to a place where they had a meditation room. It was a part of these lineage of these gurus. And I was a lousy yogi. I hated it. You know, I'd lay in the meditation. The only thing I loved about it was the fact that I'd just be able to be in that meditation room because it felt like home to me. And I mean, I kid you not, like, I'd get up at 3 a.m. in the morning and I'd go sit in that meditation room and I'd lie down, like most people are supposed to sit down. I'd lie down. And I'd start snoring like I was awful. I would have failed guru school. And you're supposed
well,
to be like
self-observant. Panache, that's how I meditate, too. I'm not into the traditional sit-up with the hands on the knees meditation. No, I meditate in the shower sometimes when I'm riding the bus.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? So for me, it's just interesting because it's just, you know, here I am in this environment. But there's something very nurturing and loving about being in that environment for me. You know, it took me back to my childhood. And it allowed me the space and the freedom to get back to who I am. And subsequently, people having experiences there too, which again was strange for me because there was already a guru, there was already a teacher there. So it was weird that people were having these experiences around me and I wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to a point where, you know, and at this point, I have to say, I was up until the experience that I had, I was probably an atheist. That's the only description you could really use about me. I didn't really believe. I couldn't reconcile the whole God conversation in the way it was being delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was deeply spiritual, I knew there was something, but I couldn't accept the version of God that we were being sold. And I got to a point where my journey brought me out to California, and I got to a point where the pain of not being myself had reached a crescendo. And I think we all have these moments where we've literally moved so far away from who we authentically are that the pain becomes unworkable. And I'm literally on my couch in Venice, California, I'll never forget it, and I'm just screaming at God. I'm like, you know what, if I'm here to be a messenger and you exist, then I need to experience who or what you are. Because in the absence of that experience, I'm not going to do this. There's no way. I'm not just going to be one of these people that recites lovely, you know, aphorisms and just regurgitates ancient information. It's like, if this is real, if you're real, then I need to experience who or what you are and what's really going on. And you know, of course, be careful what you ask for. And in that moment, all of a sudden, I started to go through this amazing transformation. And I was just experiencing all this fear and all this anger and all this sadness washing through me. And it culminated in an experience of the divine, which was just this infinite ocean of energy. And in that moment, Rebecca, I was just shown very clearly that, you know, all these man-made, all these rules and regulations that we have are all man-made. But in truth, we're all loved and accepted for who we are. And my childhood and everything that I'd gone through really started to make sense to me. It's like in that moment, I had once again reconnected with my soul signature.
Ooh-wee! You said something, you said so many powerful things, but I love how you phrased it was so much, you were in so much pain not being who you are. That's really powerful.
You know, I thought it was me. You know, I thought there was something wrong with me. You know, I thought the reason why I'd been bullied so extensively and why I had some of the experiences I had in my life was because in some way I was defective. It's like I'd bought into the judgment that people had placed upon me and I'd made them more real than the truth of who I was created to be. And I think we all do that. You know, it's like, you know, we all do that. You know, sometimes it happens in school. You know, your teacher says to you, you'll never write legibly. And then at that point, you're embarrassed to write, you know, in your handwriting. You know, a spouse could even say, you know, you're stupid. That's why I handle the finances. I mean, the things that we say to each other are awful. And what I've discovered, actually, is that the emotion that we experience as a result of these judgments is what keeps us separate from our dynamic potential. You know, this emotional piece is the most important piece. You know, for me, the greater transition that's happening now is out of mindfulness into heartfulness. And heartfulness is an all-inclusive state of being where we embrace our emotions, where we embrace our ego, where we embrace every single aspect of who we are, even those parts of ourselves that we don't want to look at. And that's really why I wrote the book, because so many people said to me, what was your journey? You know, how did you end up where you are? You know, what did you go through to get to, you know, where you are today? Because when you look at the lifespan of my journey, in a very short period of time, you know, I literally went from you know, obscurity to Oprah, and people couldn't understand how that had happened because, you know, that for most people, that's the pinnacle of where they would like to be. And for me, I recognized it as an important stepping stone onto an even greater platform that's opening up in front of me. And so so I wrote the book and literally systematically laid out a 33-day journey for people to step out of judgment into acceptance and to start to embrace their fear, their sadness, their anger, their guilt, their shame, to start to gain a deeper understanding of who they are, not just intellectually but experientially. Because I never want anyone to ever take my word for anything. I don't think that's healthy. I think we have to apply these principles. We have to make them our own. We have to test everything in order for it to become our own. Only then is it real for us. And so that's kind of how the book came into being, and that's the greater function of the book itself.
Ooh. Yes. one of the things that I love that you said, there are what I say on the show all the time, there are 7.2 billion people on this planet, and we are as different as our fingerprints. And you say, you use the term soul signature, which I love, your own personal signature, which quite frankly really doesn't have any kind of identity that man gives it. It's a soul signature. It's an infinite, it's a universal signature. And the other thing that you said, which is so important that I like to share on this show, is no, we were not born with this ability or this ability to judge or to blame or to criticize or even to look in the mirror and say there's something wrong with me. So all of this, like you said earlier, is learned. And so it's basically just an unlearning. And I love the fact that you also said, If it resonates for you, find your relationship. I'm using my words now. Find your relationship to the universe. Find your own personal relationship, and it's going to be a ride that's going to be unbelievable. So what is Panache? And let me say this. Thank you for sharing your story, and I know you've repeated it thousands and thousands and thousands of times, but thank you for sharing with such energy and importance as you've just done it for the first time.
Thank you. You know, it's funny because there's something powerful about articulating our story. For me, it's interesting because I'm kind of at the point now where when I'm sharing my story, it's almost like I'm talking about somebody else, and that's very hard for people to understand. Because my story belongs in the past.
That's right.
And I'm kind of at the point now where I have very little use for the past anymore. So it's interesting for me to share that story because it almost feels like I'm talking about someone else. So it's nice to experience the spaciousness around that story because so often when people share their story, they're so identified with it, it's real for them.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like I'm reading the description of someone else's life almost or articulating the experience of somebody else's life, of course, but all of that has allowed me to get to where I am now. So thank you for allowing me to share it.
Yes. Well, I know exactly what you mean about it's a story, and the story is the past, and the story really, you know, I speak for myself. I am not my story, especially in this moment right now. But like you said, the connecting, people connect with stories, and so it's important because we are so much alike. We are more alike than we are different, and that's just another testament to that. And one of the things that I love about your book, the book, Discovering Your Soul Signature, is your honesty and being real with what happens behind the scenes. And you've shared so many behind-the-scenes stories from your book. That is what this show is about, what happens behind the scenes. Let me just ask this question because this is very important, too, before we get to behind the scenes. There's just so much. The journey to discover, to activate one soul signature, what can someone expect from that?
Well, what I've discovered is that, you know, our potential isn't defined by our level of education, the neighborhood that we grew up in, who we know, our race, our gender, or our nationality, that our potential is determined by one thing and one thing alone, and that is our willingness to feel our feelings. I've noticed that there's a direct correlation between being available for life and the degree to which we can flourish and excel. And the more we can be fully available and present for each moment in life, the more we can excel at a greater rate than ever imagined. And so what we're really tapping into in this book is a way to access your dynamic potential. Your soul signature is your spiritual DNA. It's who you are at your most authentic core. And when you align with that part of yourself, literally the love that has remained distanced from you becomes the moment-to-moment experience of your life. There's a deeper level of intimacy. You know, the health and radiance that may have eluded you all of a sudden becomes your natural way of being. And the abundance that is available to us in every moment that we're working so hard to attain becomes available to us with absolute grace and ease. Life transforms in a way that I cannot even describe in words. And I know that because it's happened for me and it's happened for hundreds of thousands of individuals around the world who have also had the courage to remember their soul signature and to live from this place. And the funny thing is, like, I just did an event with Arianna Huffington called Thrive. And one of the marquee moments for me was a slide presentation that she did on people who are coming out of the closet as meditators. And these people are CEOs of major corporations. I mean, the heads of hedge funds. And every single one of these individuals now is saying, yes, I meditate. Yes, I connect with who I am. My connection with myself is the reason for my success. And that is why I am who I am today. That's how I've gotten here. And some people are bold enough now to say that that is the sole reason why I am successful and why my life works and why I've accumulated everything I've accumulated and why now I'm able to give back in the way that I am. I think we're alive at a point where the lie, living this false reality of who we are, is becoming increasingly unsustainable. And
that's,
I think,
right.
People are now at a point where we have no choice but to wake up. And, you know, as with all things, I think when humanity is ready, it's like the divine delivers an answer. And for me, it's like this book is the answer. It's like, you know what, let's be who we are. Let's wake up. You know, the privilege of a lifetime is to be who we are. Let's access that privilege. Let's be that. You know, instead of conforming, because conformity to me is death, let's blaze our own unique trail. Because our soul signature, as much as we all sign our name with ink, the way we use that ink is unique and different. And as much as we all have a soul, the way we express our divinity is unique. We're all unique expressions, and that's the point. Be that unique expression, unleash that potential, and your life will take off in a way that I cannot even articulate in words.
Let me just soak that in, Panache. Let me just soak that in. When I was younger, just sharing a little bit of my story, when I was younger, I asked the universe for two things. I asked to live to my potential. I had no idea what that meant. And the second thing was to be happy. And I spent most of my life searching for this feeling, this wanting, this connectedness, but this feeling of being happy. And this happiness was something that I wanted I needed it to sustain me. I wanted to feel it in every moment. So my journey was looking for the relationship, looking for the achievements, looking for the bank account, looking for the titles, looking for accomplishments to get this feeling. And what I discovered is that this feeling, what you said, the soul signature, this feeling is total, not only love, but total acceptance of not only myself, but everything around me and everyone around me.
That's exactly right. You know, I think Jesus delivered one of the most profound teachings that humanity will ever receive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ultimately, however, we haven't had the level of consciousness required to fully understand what he was saying. I believe that now we're moving into a place where we can really understand what he was saying. And it breaks down to three simple things. The first thing is know yourself. Know thyself. The modern version is know yourself. And what does that mean? That means take the time to get to know every single part of you, who you are, your anger, your sadness, your fear, your motivation, your guilt, your shame. Take the time to come into a conscious level of awareness around every aspect of you. Then the second part of that was love thyself, which is basically love and embrace all that you are. So once you've come into an awareness around who you are, then at that point, accept who you are. Now, how you do that is to meet every part of you without judgment. Just simply observe yourself without judgment. That's the highest form of spiritual practice there is. And then the third part of his wonderful teaching is, then you can love others, you know, in the same way that you love yourself. And that's the miracle right there. This threefold path is really the miracle, to know oneself, to love oneself, and then to be able to love the world as oneself, because in truth, there is no separation. And for me, you know, when you really get to know you, and in spirituality we compartmentalize ourselves, there's negative energy, there's positive energy. I just want you to know that all of those labels are limitations.
Yes.
That in truth, you just are who you are. And it's time for us as a community to go beyond those labels and to know ourselves in our totality. And this is heartfulness again, meeting who we are all-inclusively with acceptance. And then engaging in the most powerful form of spiritual practice there is, which is just to observe yourself and your life without judgment. That is the highest form of spiritual practice there is. So when you're angry, instead of lashing out at people and then feeling guilty about the fact that you did, how about you just experience your anger in your body and breathe and relax and just experience it in you? When you can experience it in you, you diminish the anger quotient of the universe. You're no longer putting it outside of you. It's done. Same thing with sadness. Sadness isn't a sign of weakness. It doesn't mean that you're less than. It doesn't mean that in some way you're deficient. Sadness is a miracle and a blessing. I love being sad. When something touches my heart, I cry. Regardless of where I am, I can't help it because something has moved me. And so our tears are a blessing. It's just that we don't see them that way. We've been conditioned to believe differently. And our fear is fantastic. Like when I start feeling scared or fear in my body, so right before the book was coming out, I started to feel this anxiety and this fear because I am very transparent in the book. And it's very different being transparent in a workshop with 30 people or 300 people than it is being transparent with potentially millions of people. So there's a different, there's a whole other level of exposure that comes as a result of writing a book. And plus also then, this book lives beyond you. So I started to feel almost this fear and this embarrassment almost, like, oh my God, like, I'm really putting myself out there. And that's when you know it's good, by the way, when you're on the line. And I just, instead of resisting it, I would just breathe and relax into it and just experience it, recognizing it for what it is. You know, we've got our reality arse backwards. You know, we're so outwardly focused. You know, it's like we know everything. We know we're so engaged in everything outward that we've forgotten that the most important relationship that there is the one that we have with ourselves, and we have to reprioritize that. And so, you know, these are just some simple things that I've discovered, is that this culture of making wrong and this, you know, conforming and these societal norms and all these things that, you know, we're told are supposed to be good and constructive are actually killing us. Our unprocessed emotional content is actually killing us from the inside out, and most people don't even know that.
And that's why you rap, huh?
Exactly why I rap. Yeah.
I saw a video of you rapping, or heard a video of you rapping, and I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. Go, Panache, go. And you really got into it toward the end. You really were really, really going for it at the end.
Thank you. You know, I've been very blessed to have lots of different experiences in my life, and music came into my life at a point where it actually saved my life in a lot of ways, because it gave me a place to belong at a point in my life where I felt so lonely and so isolated, and I was kind of at the point where I just don't know why I'm here. And in some ways, music was honest. It was honest. It brought socioeconomic backgrounds and different levels of education and different ethnicities together in a collective experience, in the same way that spirituality does, really. It's a very spiritual experience for me. And so music came into my life and allowed me an expression for all of the energies, all of these energies I had inside of me, because emotions are just energies in motion. It allowed me an expression for my anger. It allowed me to articulate the frustration of my youth. It allowed me to, you know, experience, to articulate my experience of love and sadness and loss and all these different things. And I think art does that. You know, art and spirituality go hand in hand for me. And so music is fun. I love music. You know, it's a, people put out meditation albums. I put out rap albums. It's just
I love it. I love it. I know. It's the best. It's the best. My favorite artist is a rapper, just by chance. But one of the things I wanted to add to your so many great points that you made. You talked about acceptance and love. You said three things. You said know yourself. Accept and then you love yourself, and then of course you love everyone else. And I want to throw one more thing in there, Panache, one more thing that I've needed to really, really get on this journey is patience. Mm-hmm. Patience with the process, patience with the growing, patience with evolving, patience with all of it. I like to say, you know, I plant an award-winning rose bush in the ground. I fertilize it, I water it, and I don't yell over it and say, hurry up and grow, hurry up and bloom. So this patience is another form of self-love and acceptance and with everyone else, with the universe. This patience is allows me to relax and breathe with all of it.
That's right. You know, I think ultimately we are hardest on ourselves. And you know, I just did an event at Random House, and they did an open house where authors get to meet the readers. And the first question I asked everybody was, how many of you judge yourselves? And every single one of them put their hands up, every single person in the room. We judge ourselves for something in our lives. Well, just imagine if we could meet ourselves with acceptance and love. You know, patience for me is born of a deep understanding of who we are, because then we can be compassionate towards ourselves. You know, and it all ties back to really having an awareness of who we are and why we do certain things, you know, in certain situations. Like there's one chapter in the book where I talk about this survival mechanism that I have where, and it goes back to my life in London, you know, I developed this survival mechanism to where, you know, when I feel threatened or I feel like life isn't going my way, I get to a point where I'm larger than life and my energy gets huge. Okay, and it goes to a point of don't mess with me. And that's the survival mechanism that I created in order to survive in East London. East London's like, you know, on any good day, it can be like a war zone. You know, it used to be when I was growing up. And so you need that persona in order to survive, or you think you do. You know, the truth is everyone else is just as afraid as you are. And they're just not honest about it. And so, you know, this, we all have these parts of ourselves. But for me, it's like, you know, instead of crucifying myself for that way of being, having an awareness of it now, it's like, oh, I'm going to that puffed up place of don't mess with me that I used to go to when I was a teenager to survive when I was on the streets. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do that right now. Like, there's no threat here. There's no, no one's holding a gun to my head here. It's okay. Like, I can breathe and I can relax. And then you start to then relax. You know, the more we cultivate this understanding of who we are, the more we know ourselves, the more we can accept ourselves, the more we relax into who we are.
Mm. And also I wanted to add, too, knowing who you are, of course, but then also knowing that everything that's happened to me is in perfect order. It's not my plan. It's the universe's plan. And so let's just sit back. I'm going to sit back on this ride, hands behind the head, legs crossed, and enjoy the ride without resisting any of it. Just like you said, embrace it all, accept it all. This is a hell of a ride. And the universe, for me, the universe has designed it. And who am I to criticize or judge or even think that there's anything wrong? Am I right?
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite chapters in that book is Roller Coaster. And, you know, and I personally love roller coasters. Like, I live near Disney, and so I always go to Space Mountain. That's like my favorite ride. And the reason why I like it is because it's pitch black and you can't see what's happening. And you have to trust. You know, it's not like a roller coaster that's outside where, you know, you can see what's going to happen. you know, I love Space Mountain for the reason that I can't see what's going to happen. And at the end of these roller coaster rides, you know, there's always these really dodgy pictures that you get, you know, and you can buy
yes,
them. And, you know,
yes.
And there's always one of two things going on. There's like, there's a six-year-old with her hands up in the air with a huge smile on her face, just absolutely enjoying it and just letting the roller coaster take her wherever it wants to take her. And then there's typically an adult who looks like they want to throw up and they're holding
up. Yes, that would be me. That would be me.
Right. And so, but this is life, right? Life is literally like this roller coaster ride. Like you're going to get shot forward at a speed that you don't even feel comfortable. And then there's dips and twists and turns. And sometimes life's going to flip you upside down. And the key is the more we relax in the midst of all of this, the more we can enjoy it. The more we think we need to control the outcome of what's happening in any given moment, the more we suffer. So resistance really just equals suffering, and acceptance equals freedom.
That's right. And what about thinking that we have to do anything to make anything happen, or
yeah.
just what I say is there's nothing I need to do. There's only what I am inspired to do.
Right, that's exactly right. And also, I think that inspiration is born of something internal. You know, it's born
right.
of something deep within us that's pulling us along. You know, for me, that's really it. You know, it's funny because the traditional model of success for me is an empty promise. You know, I've met people who have all the money in the world who are absolutely miserable. Why? Because success is an empty promise. They
That's
get
right.
there, and it's not all it's cracked up to be. In fact, it's not even anywhere near what it's cracked up to be. And that's why, for me, it's important now that we come back to connecting with ourselves, that we unplug, you know, we take some time to unplug every day and disconnect from all this overstimulation that we're engaged in, and we come back to this place of centeredness, just resting in the awareness of our breath and relaxing. Because I've found that, again, there's a direct correlation between the quality and experience of our lives and the degree to which we connect with who we truly are. And I cannot emphasize that enough.
I want to share with you what you said a year and a half that I found on a video. You were being interviewed, and I loved your mannerism. I loved the way that you talked. I loved what you were saying. And you said it. Your message, when you deliver your message, is in such a loving, embracing way. So I was attracted to that. And then you said something, my dear Panache. And then you said something that just stopped me in my tracks. And it was about judgment. And you said that, and I'm quoting, that the most judgmental people are the spiritual people.
Yeah.
And my mouth flew open because
yeah.
that was me. You were absolutely
yeah.
right. I was, oh, I'm at this level. I'm at a higher level than you. And it just stopped me. And that line, which is so true, changed my life.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because your average non-spiritual, and there's nothing average about, and first of all, this distinction between spiritual and non-spiritual is a complete illusion. But anyway, someone who isn't spiritual, let's say, that someone who doesn't have an outward manifestation of their spirituality can only judge themselves in three dimensions. You know, your average spiritual person, someone who's externalized or has an outward demonstration of their spirit, can judge themselves in 16.
Yes, I remember that line too.
So your average person gets up and judges themselves for what they see when they look in the mirror, and then your spiritual person judges themselves for the fact that their second chakra isn't spinning properly. You know, so there's a whole other level of judgment that we have, and this is something that's really important. I think we need to do away with these labels of spiritual and non-spiritual, because ultimately what I've discovered is that sometimes the spiritual label just gives people an excuse to inadvertently be better than other people who aren't, and that isn't even true.
That's
you know,
right.
It's like I meditate and I do all these things and, you know, I'm a healer and I'm all these other labels, you know, and all these other labels mean in some way that I'm purer or better than people who aren't, and it doesn't mean that at all. Ultimately, what I've discovered is that life is an infinite continuum and everyone's ending up in the same place regardless of how they live their lives. And it's hard
That's
to
That's absolutely
to
right. You're
no,
right.
I'm not advocating, you know, just being mean and living, you know, a closed-hearted life where you just basically screw everybody in your life. I'm not advocating that. But what I'm saying is that eventually the truth will catch up with you no matter how you live your life. And I believe that the truth is catching up with everybody right now. Everyone is being forced to discover their soul signature and to come back to their true purpose, to align with their passion, and to uncover the deeper joy that lives within them. And that's the time that we're living in. This is like, it's like everyone's unbalanced equation is being balanced. It's like everyone's being called out on everything. Mm-hmm. That's where we are.
Yes, everything is in order. Now, you said something, let's talk about some of the things that you revealed in your book, some of the personal things which touched me a lot, which was really, really, you're talking about shame, and that is something that I have experienced most of my life, and it has really, really had me by the throat, if you will. Can you share with my listeners just a little bit what that is defining, and how that manifests, and how does that show itself?
Well, shame is, you know, that which we do in private, which we'll never reveal, you know, because we feel that if we revealed it in some way, we'd be unlovable, or people would just vilify us. And so our shame manifests in the form of that, you know, that extra glass of alcohol that you have before you go to bed. You know, it manifests in the form of prescription pills. It manifests in the form of your pornography. It manifests in the form of everything that we do that we don't want other people to know that we do. And shame is like it's a very powerful energy, because as long as we have any sense of shame around anything that we're doing, we can never really be worthy of life. You know, it robs us of our level of worthiness. You know, I remember for me, shame kicked in because I was Indian. I was born in England, but I was Indian, and but I was never really accepted for being English, actually. And so I remember kind of having this shame around being Indian. It was the weirdest thing. Like, people would come over to my house, and I'd have pictures of, like, gurus up on the wall, and I was embarrassed by that. Mm. They'd go over to my friends' houses, and they wouldn't have that. So they'd come over to my house, all of a sudden it becomes a topic of conversation, like, who's that on the wall, and why is there a garland of flowers around them? And I'd say, oh, that's just my uncle, right? You know, something, right? You passed away, it's my uncle, mm-hmm. my mom. So, you know, so we all have this shame. We all think that there are parts of us that we need to be ashamed of, or that, you know, we need to hide or conceal, or that we're embarrassed by. And what I want people to know is that you're not alone in your shame. That actually there are people all over the world who feel the exact sense of shame that you do. And that the more we can talk about these things, and the more we can articulate them out loud, the freer we become. And what's required is courage and a willingness to be vulnerable. Because I think the more we can just say, you know what, this is what I'm ashamed of, or this is what I do, and this is how my life is, and people can say, you know what, I do the same thing, and this is what happens to me. And then at that point, we can shine the light of conscious awareness on that which we were once unwilling to shine the light of conscious awareness on. And the very second we do that, of course, it's over. And so
yeah, I remember you saying that. As soon as you put the light on it, as soon as it comes out of hiding, you're done. You're done being. The ball and chains has been broken.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I think ultimately it's so important to be honest with yourself. You know, even if you can't be honest with the world around you, at least always be honest with yourself, so you can. You can get on it.
Yes. I love that. Yes. Honest with yourself and honest with, you know, your universe, which you are the universe. But, yeah, honesty with self. And I really don't think you need to be honest. Well, this is just me. I don't think I need to be honest with anyone else. If I can really, truly be honest with myself, look in the mirror. Believe it or not, Panache, I was adopted, and I was ashamed that I was adopted, only because my mother was ashamed that she couldn't have any children. So I grew up probably into my 30s, early 30s, pretending that I wasn't adopted and never admitting it. And finally, when I was able to, it sounds crazy, but that shame of being adopted was in every day of my life. Talking to people, you don't look like your mother, you don't look like your father. Yeah, it was a big mess. It was a big mess.
I know. You know, so many people have health issues too, you know, and they're ashamed of them because, you know, I never forget it. Like, this one girl came to one of my workshops, and she was ashamed of the fact that she had diabetes. And it was like this big deal for her, right? And everyone was, everyone would always kind of tread around the subject, and no one would ever really, like, talk about it. And she just got she just felt alienated and isolated because she has diabetes. Now, of course, so many people have diabetes today, you know, and so again, it's like shame has us believing that we're alone and we're isolated, and that in some way, you know, it keeps us unworthy of the support and the love that's always around us. And so I just want people to know that there's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, your sexual expression, you know, whatever it is, right? It's okay. It's all okay. That in truth, the energy that created you, where you come from, source, potential, whatever it is, just loves you. And that it's okay now to just embrace whatever that is. Just to embrace whatever that is. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I wanted to say, you talked about in your book about appearing on Oprah, and then even more importantly, how you felt when it was over and what happened, what you experienced after all that was over. Can you mind sharing that with us?
She shone this incredible light on me, and I was absolutely honored to be there at the age of 35. And, you know, that's an experience that most people would never have. And, you know, she'd had some contemporary thought leaders on before, but she dedicated a show to three of them. You know, she didn't dedicate an entire show to them individually. And so I was honored to be there and honored to be featured individually. And, you know, this huge light gets shone on you, and then, of course, what's left is your shadow. And what you have to embrace is everything that you haven't dealt with inside of you. It's kind of funny because it's like Oprah did to me what I facilitate in other people. And, you know, the following days I was just like sad, actually, just this sadness and just, you know, this strange feeling. And all of a sudden relationships had changed. It's like people were following me on Twitter because they wanted me to retweet things so she would see them. Or, you know, peers and colleagues of mine would call me asking me how I got on there because they'd been trying to get on there for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and could I make that happen? And when I told them how it happened, nobody believed me. And so it was just this interesting thing had shifted. Like, I was still the same person, but the world around me and its perception of me had changed. And it was this weird feeling, like, it's you know, it's like if you ever want to know who your friends are, go on Oprah. And that experience will show you very clearly, you know, who really loves you and who supports you, you know, and it also shows you all the other sides of people's humanity that they ordinarily won't show you. And so it was a really interesting experience. And I was so grateful, Rebecca, for the fact that right around the whole time this Oprah thing was going on, my girls had been born. So September 23rd, my girls had been born. The Oprah show aired on February 25th. And so I was in full-blown dad mode. And I'll never forget, like, the day after the Oprah interview, I just posted this. I just put pre-Oprah, you know, changing diapers, taking out the trash, you know, changing the cat litter, post-Oprah, taking out the trash, changing diapers, you know, changing the cat litter. I mean, for me, it was this family and this collective sense of family and this loving voices around me that kept me kind of rooted in reality throughout the whole thing, because there was a part of me that was elated, but there was also a part of me that that was saddened by some of the interactions or some of the conversations or some of the ways in which life was showing up afterwards. It was it was an interesting time for me.
That is interesting. Okay, so I have a question. I have a question because one of the things that I talk about on this show is things that add and subtract from happiness. And, of course, I'm talking about this internal contentment, this internal foundation of contentment and peace. And things that subtract from that, I use the word subtract and add just to make it simple, are having expectations and or attachments to any kind of outcome or any type of future moments. Did you have expectations or attachments to things that might have happened? I'm just trying to, because you titled it in your book as a sabotaging feeling or a sabotaging energy. Were there expectations attached to that also?
Not expectations necessarily, no, but I think that, you know, this inner saboteur is something that people really need to become aware of, because I think your inner saboteur waits for you to reach a point of, to reach a high point in your life, right, whatever that is, you know, to get to a place where all of a sudden things are going really well, and then the inner saboteur kicks in. And the inner saboteur is kind of this undermining energy. It's not malevolent, it's not evil, it's none of those things, but it just patiently lies in wait, and all of a sudden something great happens, and then all of a sudden it kicks in, and then you'll find yourself maybe just eating a bit too much, or, you know, tweeting a bit too much, or, you know, you'll end up Facebooking a bit too much. You know, all of a sudden it's like something kicks in that eats away at the ability to be with the magnitude of what's just happened. So, you know, for me, after Oprah, did I have expectations? No, not really, because you're lucky if you get on there once. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it's an experience that most people on the planet will never have. And so I was honored to have that. So there weren't expectations, but there was this ability to observe my inner saboteur in a greater way than I ever had before, because that was exactly the moment that your inner saboteur waits for. You know, also, in addition to that, right after that interview is when I started writing the book. So I was in this deeply cathartic, creative phase in my life. And writing a book is probably one of the most cathartic experiences you'll ever have, actually. And it's a very transformative process, too, because you have to have a look at yourself, and you're committing who you are to a page that's going to outlive you. So all of these things were happening at once. And then on top of that, I'm a father, and life is happening, and I'm married, and, you know, I'm a son, and I've got all these other things going on. And so this whole phase of 2013, I just felt like I was in a spin cycle, literally. Like, it was just, you know, and a lot of people actually that I've spoken to couldn't wait for 2013 to end, because it was a very common experience. It's like, it was almost like that final phase where the caterpillar is in the cocoon and it's breaking through the cocoon to become the butterfly. Mm-hmm. It's like 2013 was that for me. And that final period of growth is painful. You know, when you're birthing something creative, it can be painful. You know, when you're transitioning out of an old identity into no identity, it can be painful, right? So life's transitions can be painful, but that's growth. That's growth, and our ability to be with that is where the freedom kicks in. And so for me, that's really what happened, is this willingness to be destroyed, to allow every false notion of myself to be destroyed. You know, it's to allow everything that I was still holding on to just completely collapse and be taken away, and to allow the veil to just fall away for good. And that's really what 2013 was for me. And Oprah was a huge catalyst for me. And I'll never be able to express in words how grateful I was for that time and for her coming into my life and for that experience, because beyond the show, it was probably one of the most catalytic experiences I'd ever had. Again, I just feel like she was able to do for me what I'm able to do for others, and that really happens for me. So I'll be forever grateful for Oprah and for that opportunity.
Wow. Yes. Whew. Good one. Well, we have a couple more minutes, and I wanted you to talk about your 33-day program that's coming up, that's starting tomorrow. Can you tell my audience a little bit about that, Panache?
Yeah, well, I wanted this book to be a deeply immersive experience, and so I've created a free online 33-day event that accompanies the book. And literally, you know, every day in the book, you know, we get together in the morning, and in the morning you have new awarenesses and new perspectives on life, and then in the afternoon you get to test them and put them into practice in your life. Because I didn't just want to write a self-help book. I wanted to write something that was almost like a manual that was practical, that people could apply immediately to have breakthroughs. And then at night, you know, about 20 minutes before you go to bed, you read like a little meditation or a lullaby, and that allows you to then be, you know, the energy of that and the words work on you while you sleep, because what we do about 20 minutes before we go to bed stays with us throughout the night. And so this 33-day program was born. And the 33-day program consists of audio, it consists of video, and it consists of almost like worksheets that you can download and you can engage in on my website as a community as you go through this experience. And what I will say is that we officially start on May the 5th, and if you can make it, which is tomorrow, and if you can make it tomorrow, great. If you don't have a copy of the book yet, you can download a digital version of it through Amazon or through, you know, any, or through iTunes or wherever there is, so you have it in time. If you're still waiting for a physical copy, don't worry. You can still take part in the program when your book arrives, or you can begin on day one. It doesn't matter. ultimately this 33-day program is going to be evergreen. And as people find the book, they'll find the way to the program and they'll receive the support. And what will happen is that this community experience and this community energy is going to document how people are going to transform out of judgment into acceptance. And that's the most exciting thing for me, is that it's literally going to be a record of how we shift in life, of how transformation really happens. And it's been my honor to create this as a support for people to guide them through it. Because again, like so often, Rebecca, like we all feel alone. You know, we feel like we're disconnected, like we feel like we're the only one in our lives having this conversation. And I'd like to dispel that myth by letting people know that, in fact, no, there are millions of people around the world who are having this conversation and who are having the courage to be themselves. And so join me tomorrow, May the 5th, we start. If you don't have the book yet, get it on Amazon or iTunes, download it digitally, you can start reading it and you can read along with it. If you're waiting for your physical copy, do the program anyway. When the physical copy comes, start reading, move along through it. Again, it's going to be evergreen. You know, this will be there long before, you know, long after the first 33-day program window ends, because people will find this book throughout the years and they'll be able to come to this. So come there, participate, you know, share your breakdowns, share your breakthroughs, and be supported and dispel the illusion of separation as a result of your participation in this. Access your health, your love, your abundance, your intimacy, all that you are, and just allow your life to elevate you into its your grandest expression, your greatest expression, because that's what will happen.
Ooh-wee, ooh-wee. Well, I've been reading your book, my audience, we just touched on some of the topics. Panache talks about the emotions of fear, sadness, anger, guilt, shame, self-judgment, patterns, addiction, the ego, I'm not good enough, shattering inner sabotage, triggers, soul surrender, change and more is coming, on light, roller coaster, tracking our thoughts, and it goes on and on for 33 days, and each day is a topic that you will be able to relate to in one way or another. I really love this, Panache. I want to thank you so much for being on our show. Ben, I also want to let my audience know where you are. Can you please give them your website address, URL, and how can they get in contact with you?
Sure. So the only place in my life where I still need your approval is on Facebook, so like me. And the only place in my life where I'll ever have followers is on Twitter, so you can follow me on Twitter. And my website is panachedesai.com, which is PANACHEDESAI.com. PANACHEDESAI.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. I would love to have you back. We talked about maybe... Jesus, what, 30% of the book? There's just so much more, so many just insights and words of wisdom that, yes, will change your life. And, you know, one of the most important things is this being self-aware and knowing self. I agree with you totally. Panache, thank you so much for being a guest on Reality Spirituality.
Oh, thanks for having me on, and I love everyone that's listening, and thank you with all my heart for loving me.
Oh, you're welcome, Panache, right back at you. I want to thank my guest, Panache Desai, and let everyone know that you can find him again and his latest book, Discovering Your Soul Signature, Panache Desai, PANACHEDESAI. And until next week, everyone, you've been listening to Reality Spirituality. If you've enjoyed the show, go to Facebook and Reality Spirituality and like the show. You can follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington, and also, if you would like a free monthly newsletter, just email me at info@RebeccaNorrington.com. My website, RebeccaNorrington.com, we will have links to this broadcast. You can also go to RealitySpirituality.com, and you can listen to this show archived forever. And I want to remind you, my dear audience, who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You're always evolving. You're always changing. You're always growing. Love is patient, and love is kind. Be your own best friend. remember, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Let's connect again tomorrow. Next week, you've been listening to Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's the newest spirit.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one.
Reality Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality Spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Get real.
Good now,
get real good.
Now, that's what I'm about to say.
Time to get real.